Welcome back to A Friend Indeed, the podcast about modern friendships. Today, we will have a friendship story from two women who have forged an incredible bond that has seen them through the hardest of times in their lives.
You know, we've always had this running joke that we have agile minds, which is, you know, a reference to the weird changing topic of conversation all the time. So it was fitting that our minds became so agile that we had matching brain tumours.
Janice and Ellie are a million to one. They first met over 10 years ago, but their lives were changed forever when both were diagnosed with the same type of brain tumour. Now they jokingly call themselves the brain tumour twins. And together, they have raised an incredible £15,000 just this year in aid of the charity Brains Trust. This will pay for an online resource to help other people with non-malignant meningioma, their particular type of brain tumour, and it will provide the information and support that they felt was missing when they were diagnosed. But in order to understand where all that came from, we've got to go right back to the beginning of how they met.
Ellie and I met years and years ago when we worked together at Buckingham Palace during the summer opening. I don't actually remember the day that we met. I just remember that I was kind of working there, and then eventually I have more memories of time that we spent together, and particularly like the funny people that we would come across when we were working together. There's like the whole spectrum of humanity that comes through at one of those openings. It's like one of the best places to be for people watching.
We were all working, it was lots of students working together. So it was that kind of atmosphere that I think you don't often get at other stages in your life. It was kind of like being at university. It was that kind of vibe, because you were just with like very intensely with a lot of people of your own age for a kind of condensed period of time.
Like, it was fun to work with a friend, you know, and to mess about and laugh. And it was a really fun time to work with, like, young people kind of just, you know, not taking things too seriously and just joking around all the time.
So a lady came to take an audio guide from me. So the standard question to people who came to the desk was, would you like to have your audio guide in English or another language? And the lady looked at me really confused, and I said, would you like it in English? And she looked at me really confused, and I said, the audio guide, do you want to have it in English? And then she suddenly went, oh God, yeah. And I had to hide behind the desk and laugh, and I could see Janice also like dying in the corner, hiding, trying not to laugh, because her reaction was just so hilarious.
And so we lived together in a house in Tooting, which was, it was such a bizarre place.
So where the steps led up across, there was like a bridge over the railway line, which was apparently not in use.
So I was sleeping, and I woke up to the sound of this like horrible clawing away on the walls.
And so there was a kind of space outside our house between the next one, and that was where the drug dealers used to operate as well. So just dealing the drugs outside our door.
I couldn't move, because if I moved, I might find a mouse. I didn't want to touch a mouse. And so like I was just in my bed thinking, I don't know how I'm going to survive this.
Yeah, so obviously the mouse infestation was a great also bonding moment of, you know, sitting eating your dinner in the kitchen together, and then a little mouse just scuttles across the floor.
And so I called Ellie, who's literally like across the hall. So we're having this phone call in our two bedrooms, and Ellie trying to like calm me down because I'm scared of these mice.
You know, some people, they just take themselves a bit too seriously. It's a bit stressful to be with them, but that's not how it was with Janice, you know? Because if someone doesn't take themselves very seriously, I feel like I can be myself around them.
So we're a bit more adult now, but then we're also still laugh at silly things, and like are still quite like teenage like in that sense. But I suppose we've also been through a lot together. I don't know, like we've both grown up, we've both been in the working world, and like we've experienced problems within that, and we can always talk to each other about those things. So I guess the more serious side of things has evolved.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed quite a bit before Janice. So I think I was diagnosed 2011, 2012, something like that. And it wasn't something that they were going to, that could be fixed. They just said, we've got to monitor it. You might start to lose your vision. If you start to lose your vision, then you're going to have this huge surgery or not. We'll just see. And because the main symptom that I was having was it's called proptosis, you know, when it's like pushing your eye forward. So that made me very insecure about the way I looked, you know, unhappy about the way I looked, and kind of just generally quite miserable, you know. To, I think, you know, having something where it's like, there's this thing, it's quite serious, but we're not going to do anything about it. Just see you again in 6 months and we'll see. So it's kind of a bit kind of crushing, you know, sort of like underlying sort of anxiety about it.
So after I was told that I had a mass on my brain, I didn't really have very much information, and so I didn't really have much to worry about because, you know, I knew nothing. I just knew that there's a mass in my brain.
So she rang me up from A&E, where she just, I think you'd just been told that you had a mass, right, in your brain. So at that stage, it was unclear what that would really mean.
But then it was, there was a long time of waiting whilst they then kind of investigated to find out what they thought it was.
What I really wanted to do was just go to the hospital, because I just, you know, when you can, I could just hear like the fear in her voice, and also it just, you know, being really being on the phone with someone, it just feels very inadequate. I think I'm about to cry now, sorry. Just like go and you know, be like, to do something, you know.
And there was, it was late as well, because I'd gone in after hours and it'd taken them ages to get scans back and things. And so there wasn't anyone on call. There were no consultants available that they could call on to get that information. And so I was waiting for hours whilst they tried to get a consultant.
So I was walking up the hill going home, and you told me, oh, you said, oh yeah, it's called a meningioma. And I was like, that's my one. It's the same one as me. Just
at that point, I asked the doctor, because he said it was a brain tumour. And I asked him, okay, so what does that mean? Am I going to live or am I going to die? And he said he didn't know. And like at that particular moment, that was kind of the worst thing that you could hear.
I think I kind of said to her, well, you know, maybe it's the same. Like I wanted it to be the same one as mine, because it's a non-malignant tumour. So obviously less than ideal. But I don't want to say it's good, because lots of people say when you tell them, oh, well, that's the best type of brain tumour to have, as if, you know, it's great, which is slightly irritating. but when she told me, it was just really bizarre in a way as well. Like, what are the odds, you know?
We kind of are able to share that experience with each other and just talk about it in a way that we can't talk about it with other people. And it's really nice to be able to have that. I kind of think of it as, if we're lucky to have that.
Because I think that our friendship is the same. It's just like supercharged now, if you see what I mean. Because I think we always had that support for each other, and we had a similar relationship. But I think having that kind of experience together, I think I went for like some kind of appointment or something, and it was really upsetting. And I just had like a mini little breakdown in London Bridge Station. But then I could call Janice, and then after about 5 minutes of talking, it was funny again, and you've let it out. I mean, I was obviously like so hysterical that the police came up to me and asked me if I was fine, so they, well, I was going to top myself, but then after like having that conversation, it's fine. And I can call Janice as in a total wreck, and she's not disturbed by it because she knows why, and also that it's fine, but yeah, you need someone to talk to that, like you need to have a friend like that who you can just let it all out.
Because there's just so many times when life just feels too hard because of this thing that you have, and actually all you really want to do is cry. And in those moments, you don't want someone to tell you to, you know, like, just don't worry about it, it's all going to be okay, like, don't feel sad about it, and almost try and, like, boost your confidence, but in a really toxic way, because the positivity just isn't helpful at that point. Like, you just want to feel the feelings, and having someone who gets that and responds to you by just being with you and not necessarily trying to do anything for you to make you feel better, that's great. Like, I don't get that from anywhere else.
What an incredible story. The thing that stood out to me was definitely that story at the end where Ellie was talking about having a breakdown basically in a train station and calling Janice, and a friend being the only person really who could kind of talk her down from that hysterical reaction and actually make her laugh. That's a special thing, isn't it? That's friendship right there. I hope you enjoyed that story as much as I did, and do keep tuned and subscribe, please. And do let me know if you have any feedback on any of the episodes. I will put our Gmail in the show notes. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.